Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Any Stupid Questions, the podcast that gets experts to explain important things in response to some really basic questions. I'm Danielle Ward, and here to explain how newspapers work is Hugo Rifkin, a columnist and lead writer for The Times, or if you're listening in America, the London Times. Also joining me to ask the stuff we should have been taught at school are comedians Margaret Cable-Smith and Gabriel Abulu. So, Hugo, when does the owner dictate the front page? Is it in the morning or in the evening?
The honest answer is I don't really know, because I've never been aware of an owner dictating a front page. And I think I would be aware because I write editorials, which means I'm in there in the bit where the decisions are getting made. So if the owner is dictating to someone in a way that is concealed from the likes of me, then my last four editors have been really good at hiding that. That being said, the kind of newspaper I work for, maybe they're not the kind of newspapers that owners dictate.
But there must be some sort of editorial line to toe.
Yes, yes, of course. Yeah.
Do they say every week?
Yeah.
This is what we think this week.
No, I mean, my job is literally discussing and deciding what the newspaper thinks. That's what a leader writer does. I mean, look, there are reasons why I've got my job. There are reasons why the people I speak to have got their job. Probably if I was going to have the sort of view that the owner didn't think the newspaper should be expressing, which is not necessarily the same thing as the owner's view, yeah. You see what I mean, then I might not be doing the job anyway. But the idea of direct input, I mean, you probably want to ask someone who works for a tabloid.
Well, I was going to say, because there are some really nice people who work for the Daily Mail.
Are there?
Well, my friend Bridget used to write for the Mail.
Yeah, this is like,
she is nice. Yeah,
she is really nice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she used to write the diary.
Diarists are different.
Are they?
I was a diarist. Diarists are different.
Dark, well, they can be
dark
nice.
Art. It's a cult. It's a different thing.
So I was reading an article about someone who worked at the Daily Mail, and basically they don't believe anything that they are writing, but they do it anyway. Is that common in journalism?
Depends what you mean. I mean, see, the Daily Mail is, again, sort of different because the Daily Mail slightly muddles together its reporting and its commentary. Mm-hmm. Like, if you get in a proper grown-up newspaper, you won't get a columnist writing something they don't think. They might decide that it's useful for them to think it, and mm-hmm. they might not have thought it a bit earlier, but you wouldn't be told what to write. You wouldn't be expected to write something you don't think.
But are you really saying that columnists don't ever make up an opinion?
Well, I mean, it's actually quite hard to make up an opinion, because if you go to all the effort of making up an opinion, you might as well just have one. It's sort of the same thing. You do end up thinking, what would I think about that? Not what do I think about that? But it's almost the same question.
All right, but if what you think is something pretty sort of nuanced and or boring...
I see, you've read my columns.
Yeah. But I think that's most people, isn't it? That, you know, well, I suppose if you're forced to come up with an opinion...
Yeah.
Then you do have to go on one side. But isn't generally your opinion a bit more like, I don't know? And yes, you're right, that would be a boring column.
I mean, yes, you have read my columns. But, yeah, I mean, if you have a boring opinion, you try and either write it excitingly or you write about something else. I mean, I think generally the columnists I know who have extreme opinions, and I know quite a lot of them, do believe that. They do think that.
We've got onto this a bit early, but...
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's really interesting. So someone like Katie Hopkins, I know she doesn't obviously write for a grown-up newspaper, but do you think she genuinely believes, or is there money to be made from basically forming opinions that are just going to get, like, clickbait type?
Well, firstly, I don't think you can really separate the two.
Okay.
I mean, I had a horrific experience with Katie Hopkins once. I've met her only once, and it was at a party, and she came up to me and said, "I've always wanted to meet you. You write the things that everybody else is afraid to." And then she went away. And
ooh.
I thought, my God, if Katie Hopkins is saying
so
that to
horrendous.
You, what have I done wrong? And then a little later, I realised she probably thought I was Giles Corran.
Oh.
So it was fine. But No, I think Katie...
That's like an anxiety dream.
Yeah, it was a bit, really, it was this moment of abject fucking horror of who even am I? I think she believes everything she writes. But I think also you probably, if you're someone like her, you probably get yourself into a corner, right? Because she writes things to upset people. The more people she upsets, it makes her feel she's doing the right thing because she's upsetting people she doesn't like. Mm-hmm. And the more she upsets the people she doesn't like, the more she thinks she's doing the right thing, the more she comes to believe it. I think you radicalise yourself, I reckon, if you are that kind of sort of shock jock columnist, yeah.
And do you think she should be allowed that platform?
I'm glad she hasn't got it anymore, which I don't know if that's quite the same question. I don't quite know which way around whose problem it is. Mm-hmm. There's a problem with the media, publications generally being very bad at explaining what it means to have a platform. I can't really speak about Katie Hopkins, but I used to work for The Spectator for a long time. Left them very sadly in the summer. I wrote for them for 10 years, and I was their centre-left columnist, although some people find that hilarious, but in Spectator terms, I absolutely was. And there were, you know, people like Tacky writes for The Spectator. Now, Tacky is a supporter of Golden Dawn. He says the same thing as anti-Semites, whether that means he's an anti-Semite. And in conversation, too. And people were like... often said to me, how can you write for the same publication? Don't you think it's outrageous he has a platform? And it's like there's this sort of almost quite holy thing in newspapers and in magazines that you give platforms, that at editorial level you allow things to be said that would not otherwise be said, and then you oppose them if they're difficult. And there's a difference between giving somebody a platform and endorsing what they say from that platform.
Yeah. Gabriel, yes. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Who writes the puns? You know the headlines?
Oh, yeah.
Is it like a team of people? Is there like a section? If you go to the start offices.
Right, yeah.
Is there like a group of people like just writing puns all day?
Normally not. It's normally like a sort of a role you fall into. You know, basically you've got the structure of a newspaper generally. You've got the editors, you've got the reporters, you've got the sub-editors who like, you know, edit the copy. And then you've got this thing called the backbench who kind of pull everything together. And they're a bit production-y, a bit subby, a bit editorially. They do all these kind of things. And normally on a backbench, you'll have a couple of geniuses who come up with the puns.
So it's not like an assigned role. So it's not like apply to be the pun guy.
You probably can't quite make a living out of it. You'd get like one pun every 3 weeks. You know, it just wouldn't. Headlines are a nightmare. Headlines are really...
Who writes the headlines?
Yes, exactly, depends because writers don't write their own headlines and they're always complaining about it, aren't they?
Well, it depends which bit. So if, like, with leaders, you know, the unsigned bits, the voice of the paper, the inexplicable convention is the person who's written it does write the headlines. So I write headlines for that and it's very difficult. Mm. On my columns, I don't write the headlines. And, of course, you always get... In fact, my Twitter bio thing is I didn't write the headline, though, because that's what everyone always attacks you on the basis of the headline. But really, what's happening with the headline is... The headline is the paper's view of what you've written. It's not your view of what you've written. So in a way, right. The headline is the newspaper reporting on your column in the same way the newspaper would report on anything else.
You say a lot of people complain about them. And so my next question is, below the line comments, good idea or not?
For who?
For everyone. Society.
Obviously, there are some stories that don't have comments open for very good reasons. Mm. But do you think, in general, if you've written something, do you want any old member of the public to be able to wade in underneath?
I'm a sort of bit of a masochist in that regard. I love comments. I always read comments. You know, I'm very active on Twitter. I don't mind the abuse. I find the abuse quite useful. It helps me to sort of shape my perspective of myself.
I love that.
But do you honestly not
I tell them
feel...
to fuck off a lot.
Absolutely. But, I love you for it. But I get hurt by my children vaguely insulting me. Does it honestly not bother you?
Obviously, it depends what it says. I think I'm quite...
Are you going to tell us what to say to hurt you?
Yes. I think I'm quite hardened generally. You know, my father was a politician. I've grown up being fully comfortable with the idea that strangers will hate you. That's fine. Mm. At bus stops, even.
You should be a stand-up.
Well, thank you. But sort of more than that, generally the abuse you get as a journalist, it's not for what you've done, it's for what you think. So it's like very occasionally you'll get something that's actually criticising the craft of what you've done, but normally that's by someone whose opinion you wouldn't respect anyway. You know, what do you know?
Sure, but isn't what you think even... more a part of you than what you write.
Look, on the
getting philosophical here.
On the rare occasion you'll get a literate bit of abuse from someone who's actually understood what you're saying and has critiqued it, not just in a way that makes you realise you're wrong, because that can be quite rewarding, but in a way that makes you realise you're wrong and is personally hurtful, then it's upsetting.
Okay, but I'll
that's pretty rare. That's pretty rare.
So that's your take on it. Do you think they should be open up in general to, because obviously there's a lot of women, a lot of female columnists are subject to abuse.
It's horrendous. Yeah, I mean, look, firstly, there's a difference between opinion columns and news articles. Yeah. Why you have comments on news articles, I have no idea. It's nonsense. I mean, you have it for the clicks so that you can get the advertising. Also, because of the Times has a paywall, you know, we're a subscription publication, everyone who's abusing me has paid to do so.
That's helpful. A good point.
But it also means they can't be anonymous.
Yeah.
So people talk differently. Female columnist friends of mine, particularly on The Guardian, it's horrendous. You know, if you work for The Guardian, the job is basically stand here and have things thrown at you and we'll pay you for it. And I don't see much point or merit to that at all, no.
If I can ask, paywalls or no paywalls?
I'm sort of pro them. I mean, I would say that because I work for a company that's got one, but I've seen what's happened to newspapers since the advent of the internet. You know, you've got The Telegraph is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a paywall these days, but it sacked everyone who was any good who wrote for it before they brought it in, which is the wrong way around.
The Independent's gone really weird as well, hasn't it?
But The Independent's got about 8 people who work there.
Oh, I think it's written by bots now, isn't it? The Independent, from what I can tell.
They're very good 8 people who work there. The editor's brilliant. And but yeah, it's a hard graft. And The Guardian is just like shoveling money into a fireplace. And really, through paywalls, The Times is coping, The FT's coping. Neither of us have had to turn into the Daily Mail. So I'm sort of pro it.
A friend of mine was saying that he thought people might have been more in favour of paywalls if it hadn't been Rupert Murdoch who did the first one. And that people hate him so much, they're like, right, paywalls must be bad in that case. When actually, paywalls sort of... I mean, you know, we're all we're all trying to work out how to make money from on the internet.
Do you pay for the Guardian app?
I'm a Guardian member.
Are you? What?
Yeah. What does that mean?
I pay a
loads of money.
It's not loads of money.
Is it not?
It's like 30 quid a year.
Oh,
or
okay. I'm thinking of the master classes that cost like 450 quid.
Yeah, no, I haven't done any of them.
What are the perks?
I should be giving them. less guilt.
That's good.
Smugness.
Listen, yeah, exactly. I'm a middle class Catholic, and that's fine for me.
Do you think tabloids invented clickbait?
Ooh, did tabloids invent clickbait?
This sounds like you know the answer.
No.
I mean, look, the technical answer is no, they didn't. Clickbait was invented by, there's these two American aggregate news services that are known for having invented clickbait, and I can't remember what either of them are called. I read a book about it quite recently.
Do they feel bad?
They feel rich. Mm. I mean, they the way they developed clickbait was they'd push out 50 versions of every article and see which one got the most and then refine it and then push out 50 versions the next day and, you know, to do it that way. But, I mean, tabloids, yeah, they invented that kind of... I was going to say that, but I'm suddenly not sure. Like, because this idea of the hate reading of tabloids, you know, the I'm so shocked by that, I hate it, I just have to read it, that is an internet phenomenon.
Mm.
You wouldn't... No one used to buy The Sun because they hated it. You know, they might buy The Mail a bit because they hated it.
Or pick one up if they found one.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, generally, the making money by making people hate you is a sort of relatively recent phenomenon, just because the economics didn't work beforehand. So I'm gonna say no.
Why are so many newspapers right wing?
Okay, firstly, you've got to decide whether or not that's actually true. Okay,
yeah.
So
it's called Any Stupid Question. You can pull me up on anything.
Daily Mail, uncomplicatedly right wing.
Yeah.
Telegraph, uncomplicatedly right wing. The Sun, of course, is right-wing, but only in some ways and not in other ways. Like, The Sun is... It's not very socially reactionary anymore.
Yeah.
It used to be. Still, I don't think I'm going to get away with saying The Sun is in right-wing. At the Times, we would call ourselves a centrist newspaper, but people think centrist means right-wing these days. I think we'd call ourselves a centrist newspaper.
All the lefties I know read The Sunday Times. I read The Sunday Times.
The Sunday Times is to the right of the Times,
is
certainly.
It really?
We're different,
great
different
culture
newspapers.
Section, though.
Yeah. You know, it's all good. It's all good. Subscribe. but, you know, Guardian, obviously left-wing. Indy used to be left-wing. FT, who knows? So, yes, they are more... I mean, most journalists aren't right-wing.
Yeah, you know? Isn't it because the owners are rich and trying to protect... I mean, I know that that's a simplistic version.
Well, no, I mean, like, people who own newspapers and run newspapers want to make a success of their newspapers, right? And really, when people are talking about owners dictating what's in newspapers, they generally really are only talking about Rupert Murdoch and The Sun. right? Whether or not that's true. Nobody really suggests that the owners dictate what's in the Daily Mail. Everyone knows Paul Dacre dictates what's in the Daily Mail. No one suggests that the Barclays are saying what ought to be in the Telegraph. They probably don't even read it. Who does? So I can never really get behind the this is because this is what the owners want to happen. But newspapers are chasing readers.
Yeah.
And the readers you want generally are wealthier readers because advertisers will pay more for them. And readers like reading things that they broadly agree with. So that sort of takes you there.
Oh, that's a bit depressing.
That's very depressing.
I always assumed that, you know, the country as a whole was slightly left-leaning, but the vote was always split. But I don't think that's right anymore. There are
quite a lot of Tory governments.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, when did
generally
you,
speaking.
There was that really long Labour one, wasn't there?
The most right-wing Labour government in 50... Labour, yeah. Labour yeah. Party in 50 years managed to...
Do you remember everyone was angry?
I know.
There was also this Brexit thing. I don't know if you've...
That was the Russians. Apparently it wasn't the Russians, we found out last week. It is just that people wanted to vote Brexit. Turns out. So on the subject of the Sun, how much do you buy into the idea that it is the Sun what wins it? By that I mean, can the Sun swing an election?
It depends on the election. I don't think the Sun could, you know, suddenly back the Natural Law Party and all of a sudden that would happen. I think the Sun is quite good at getting itself close to power. I think the Sun makes a point of not backing somebody who isn't going to win. There was certainly a time when it really, really mattered what the Sun said. When the Sun backed Blair, for example, that was obviously important. But it was important because it was indicative of what Blair was doing, because Blair was trying to reach over to those people who wouldn't have voted Labour beforehand.
Which do you think came first, though? Do you think the Sun backed Blair and that's what pushed him forward? Or do you think the Sun backed Blair because they thought he was going to win the election?
I don't think they'd have backed him if they didn't think he was going to win the election.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to lose.
No, but wasn't it more that they thought he was capable of winning it? They can't have been that... were they that confident?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Okay. Yeah, they were. So, I mean, whether... I don't know. No, who knows? I think it probably makes a difference, yes. I'd have thought so. You know, if the Sun was back in Corbyn now, lots of people who have reservations about Corbyn might think, well, if the Sun's backing him, I must be wrong. You know, that only works if you're straddling that particular bit of the political spectrum where you need to reach a bit into the right from where you are on the left.
Margaret.
Okay, I'll ask a simple question. How long have newspapers got?
You mean as actual printed bits of paper that you read?
Yeah. And line the budgie cake
I was thinking about this, but when I get a newspaper, even though there are bits that I want to get to and I like reading, I sort of feel like I have to read the other bits.
Why?
A bit. Not all of it. I rip the sport up. Can't be bothered. But the news bit and stuff. There's something about the fact that I've bought the actual factual bit of paper that makes me think, well, I should get the most out of this and at least scan the news. And what I'm worried about is... So it's like eating your vegetables before you get your pudding. Once newspapers don't exist, I think maybe no one's going to eat their vegetables anymore. And what happens then?
Well, this is why newspapers are so keen on apps. You know, your tablet edition, your phone edition is because you get to curate a whole product and bundle everything together. And actually, it's written for the economics of newspapers. It's really important that you can bundle things together. You know, plenty of newspapers fund a very expensive foreign desk off the back of a sports desk, for example.
The app will save it.
Newspapers will be around for a long time. Particular newspapers that we have now, some might not be around that much longer, and certainly not in newspaper form. Like if there's still a print paper Guardian in 10 years' time, I'd be surprised.
But do you think there'll be any apart from Socialist Worker which will survive?
Well, I mean, yes. Like the big fact you've always got to remember is that something like 500,000 people a day still read the Express.
Yeah.
I've never met any
Even
of them.
Though my
I've never.
Granny, m- I've n- my granny's been dead ages.
She still reads the Express.
She possibly does. No. It's dead. It's ghosts.
I mean, no. But basically, people who buy newspapers are reluctant to change the newspaper they buy and the paper they read. The Express, really, in quality terms, went off a cliff 15 years ago. They haven't really noticed yet.
But those people are going to die.
Yeah, exactly. They're just going to die, and then.
Yes.
And then newspapers.
And then there will be a problem. But it's still. You're talking 20 years until the last one of them, you know, gets...
It's quite...
I think there'll still be some form of print newspaper, but it probably won't be the priority of any newspaper to produce it anymore.
Gabriel.
Do you get upset at news programmes like Sky News and BBC News because they're basically spoilers for the newspaper?
No, should I?
Because, like, if you watch BBC News, and like, why are you going to buy the newspaper? Because I've seen it all the night before.
Yeah, no, well, there is that. Oh, you mean the paper review? Mm. Well, see, they very cleverly stop journalists from getting annoyed by the paper review by paying journalists to come on and do the paper review.
That's clever.
Which but is don't you
get
smart.
Yeah, you get annoyed if you're not on it. Well, it's more annoyed.
The money's not that great, and it's really late at night, to be honest. So I don't mind it not being on anymore. It can be a bit annoying, but then also you're sort of quite proud when your thing gets in. You don't generally get a lot of resentment between different news branches, really. There's more rivalry inside each one.
Oh, okay.
I think.
I also feel like they're now souvenirs for the news you liked from that you already know.
Do you ever save a newspaper? I've got my 9/11 newspaper still.
Oh, that's interesting.
No, I think those are going to be really important.
I think I saved when Bowie died. I got a bunch of newspapers and saved it.
But when I say we, I don't do it, but the people who do this sort of thing, we make we make the next day's newspaper with that in mind. You know, you know, our sales massively spike when there's a massive event that happens the night before. You know, we do a wraparound cover. We want it to be a kind of collector's issue.
It's weird though, you know, when there are journalist awards and it's like 9/11 and a table of people get up going, "Yay, 9/11!"
It's not ever remember that happening.
It happens all the time.
No, it happens.
Is it really?
See, anything with the news thing, you go, news articles.
And it's always obviously a big tragedy.
Yeah, but a big horrible thing.
Challenger,
yeah. Yay! Oh, I mean, it's people in their tuxedos drinking champagne.
I mean...
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
The press awards was a month ago, and yeah, all the front pages that were up for awards, what, three or four of them were Grenfell front pages, which are amazing front pages, and it is quite odd.
Yeah.
It must be a really strange sensation.
But it is, but it's also, it goes quite hard to the soul of what working in a newspaper is. It's a down and dirty profession. You know, you're supposed to be able to park your actual views and morality in order to chase a story sometimes.
How come newspapers during an election can be as biased as they want, but TV and radio are subject to purdah? Where does that come from?
The law.
Well, yes, I know it goes to the law, but what's the thinking behind it? How come that is allowed to happen?
There are laws about broadcast impartiality, which means not just in elections, if you have one side of the argument on a TV programme, you've got to have the other side on, or at least as much. That amount. It's why Nigel Farage kept getting on Question Time, because it was decreed that there was this part of the argument that had to be represented, and oh look, he's the only person in it.
Yeah. So and this is why we're all slamming our heads against a wall when it comes to the BBC at the moment.
Sure, but it's worth bearing in mind that someone like America doesn't have those laws. That's why their news is shit and insane. And it's just people shouting at each other.
Fox News is great for that.
But Fox News, you've got one sort of people shouting at each other. MSNBC, you've got another sort of people shouting at each other. Nobody meets and there's no... It's just madness. But newspapers, you couldn't really do that with newspapers. It's a hell of a thing putting together a newspaper every day. You know, you're pulling together a team of hundreds of people to produce hundreds of thousands of words to then have to go through it and go like, you know, well, this columnist has slagged off the Lib Dems, so we need to get someone to slag off maybe the Tories and the crossword. You know, it's implausible. And also, I guess originally it comes from this idea that broadcast news comes from this thing where it was piped into your house and you got what you were given, whereas people go out and choose their newspapers. So you can run away from newspapers in a way that originally you couldn't run away from broadcast news, I suppose, is the logic.
This is the thing that lots of liberal people like to bring up, that the apologies should be bigger.
Yeah.
In newspapers. Why has that never happened? Is it just an obvious...
One reason is that the apologies that people think should be in a newspaper are not necessarily the apologies that the lawyer thinks should be in the newspaper. And so, like, apologies might be by agreement with whoever it is being apologised to, and the wording is very careful, and et cetera, et cetera. Traditionally as well, another view has been that, look, if you put something on the front page and it turns out not to be true, no one's going to read a massive apology on the front page. Actually, I think everyone would read a massive apology on the front page.
That's what I think. But is that the argument? Is it sort of like, oh, no one wants to?
Sometimes it's just impractical. Yeah, there's no reason why apologies shouldn't be bigger. If, you know, regulators could make apologies bigger, I'd be fine with that. I don't mind. Yeah.
So in that case, how easy is it for a newspaper to print lies then retract? I mean, is
retract
that a
policy?
Retract
them in tiny, that's what I mean. You know, so to print a lie, but that's an entertaining one that lots of people will buy, and then have your apology ready for the next day on page 19.
You know? Depends on your lie. You know, I mean, if you're going to lie about someone, they can sue you. And they can see you for a lot of money. They can see you for millions. And newspapers' budgets, although newspapers at times have a lot of money at their disposal, the day-to-day level, the budgets are pretty tight. So when you get sued, it's a problem.
But, but if you lying about immigrants generally, you know, that's sort of vague.
There's a whole one in five Muslim. What was it, the Sun that ran the one in five Muslims of sympathy towards extremist views, stuff like that?
No one's going to sue.
Yeah. It's basically all of the Daily Mail is what we're trying to say. Yeah. The whole of the Daily Mail.
I would
have an apology aside it the next day, the same length.
Perhaps this sounds too defensive. I don't think even like that, what's going on is quite a lie. I think often with the stories that end up like that, something's gone wrong, you know. Someone's decided that's the great statistic to go for, and it turns out to not be quite true. And people double down and protect themselves. When you get something wrong, you look stupid, and nobody likes looking stupid. And even, you know, you might know that there are virtually no Daily Mail journalists on Twitter. But even so, when the Daily Mail has published something that, like, sort of millions of people are saying, this is outrageous, this is untrue. Not just this is outrageous because it offends me, but this is outrageous because it's untrue, they have lied.
Yeah.
They're not having a good day. You know, no one wants to go there. Yeah, but, I mean, there aren't, forgetting for factual errors of that sort, no, there aren't great repercussions, except for reputationally.
What's your opinion on the Stop Funding Hate campaign? So this is people who have contact advertisers in the Daily Mail. I think they also go for the Sun, don't they? But the Daily Mail seems to be the big flagship. And they contacted advertisers saying, don't advertise in the Daily Mail. This is funding hate. What do you think that's naive?
On one level, I think it's absolutely fine. It's a marketplace. Newspapers want to attract readers. They want to attract advertisers. If people choose to exercise that power, that's fine. But I also worry it's a bit short-sighted. Because speaking as, you know, call myself a liberal, if anything's become apparent in the last couple of years, it's, there's more of them than there are of us. And at the point at which they start doing that, and, you know, the point at which you start, you get a bit of it in America, you'd get people threatening to boycott publications or TV channels that run adverts for Planned Parenthood or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the power of the boycott is not just available to good people. And so I worry a bit about the precedent that sets.
I find all inquiries really boring, so I don't know what happened.
Well,
how did Leveson...
That's exactly the issue.
Well, I know. Asking a stupid question. Sorry. Did Leveson change anything? Is anything going to happen?
Leveson changed a lot because you don't really get, in British newspapers, long-lens, invasive photography anymore. Generally, most photographs you'll see of celebrities in British newspapers are by people who either know it's happening or want to be there. You wouldn't get topless shots that from people who didn't know they were being taken anymore. You wouldn't get phone hacking anymore. You wouldn't get so much invasive stuff of the victims of crimes. People look over their shoulder a lot. Don't forget, Leveson effectively shut down a newspaper. Well,
yeah.
it was the hacking scandal. It was pre-Leveson, but that's a fairly major thing. So I mean, Leveson had a big impact on the industry. I would say yes.
On Gina Miller and Brexit, how crazy a headline can the Daily Mail put out? You know, because they had the whole thing about traitors and, you know, how far can they push that?
We'll see.
Definitely will see.
Yeah. I don't think there's an end, but again, you know, there's a market for it. A lot of people agree with this stuff, possibly more than who don't agree with this stuff. Maybe we live in a world where enemies of the people is this, like, sort of shocking thing to put on the front of a newspaper.
Yeah.
There'll have been a lot of people who were like, yep.
is it the Mail Online is one of the world's most read sites?
Second in the world, something like that? Third in the world?
And is that because of things... I mean, if it's in the world, surely is that because of the sidebar of shame? Does that really draw people in? You know, that you have the sidebar if you've not been on the Daily Mail Online website.
Who are you talking to right now?
Well, you know, just see if there's someone in prison, maybe. It's got the sidebar and it's just all like, this woman's got cellulite and you'll never guess what George Clooney did and all this sort of stuff.
It literally never ends. Yeah.
Just scroll down forever. Is that what brings people into that site, or is it more political than that?
No, it's that.
It is.
Yes. I mean,
people just want dirty stories about celebrities
and pictures.
But they also, the American Daily Mail is very different from the British Daily Mail, the website.
Yeah.
The British Daily Mail website is very different from the newspaper. They occasionally, you know, they occasionally do the political stuff as well. I think a lot of the reason why it wasn't worth their while having Katie Hopkins anymore was because she attracted so much hate online, but relative to a picture of Beyonce in a bikini, it's just not worth the bother.
I mean, there are, I know Daily Mail readers who read it because they're like, oh, I don't like politics. And yet the Daily Mail is this screaming political headline most of the time.
Only in print form, though.
Yeah.
Only in print form, not online.
Do journalists all wait around in a members' club smoking cigars and waiting for a scoop?
No.
Yes. Yes, they do. We just, no, just say yes.
Is there a club that you all hang out in?
No. Have you ever said, I've just got a big scoop in your life?
Have you ever said, hold the front page?
I've thought I've had a big scoop, but I've been wrong several times.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Have you got a hat with a ticket in it?
No. Oh. No, why not?
You need one.
I'd imagine it used to be a more sociable profession than it is now. When I started... You know, I first started working in a paper, 17, 18 years ago, about that. Even then, there was this obvious division between the people over 40 who went to the pub every lunchtime and came back steaming and hammered away at their keyboards loudly, and the people under 40 who did all the work. And these days, you just get the people who do all the work. You know, there's not the same amount of money sloshing around. You work very hard. You work much harder. So you don't all slope off to the same bar. You're not all on Fleet Street anymore for starters, so it's much more spread out. The only place you'd really get anything like that is in Westminster, where the lobby, they all know each other, they all do drink in the same bars, they do trade scoops in that kind of way. So that's a bit more like the kind of the old culture used to be, I reckon.
Did you become a journalist because you really liked Superman?
No.
Oh. The first journalist I ever saw was probably Lois Lane.
I'm not saying I didn't like Superman, but yeah, no, I don't think that was one of the driving things.
Was it a thing that you wanted to do? Was it, or was it a profession you fell into?
Well, sort of both. It's what I always wanted to do when I was a kid. It seemed to kind of nasty and hard, like hard as in nasty, really, yeah, rather than difficult, although obviously difficult. And then I wanted to be a novelist instead, like all journalists. And I ended up by worked for a website, and I ended up working for a paper, and then suddenly I had a career, and that was that.
Do you still want to be a novelist?
I am a novelist.
Sorry.
But not a very good one. No, I'm much better at writing for papers than I am at writing novels. And novels, my God, they're just so long.
They're really long, aren't they? Because I always used to want to write a novel.
Yeah, I just assumed it would happen.
Yeah,
you know,
but now I don't
have
want
a novel. But the effort that goes into
a book deal, couldn't think of anything worse.
Yeah, I mean, and even once it has happened, it needs to happen again, like loads of times, or else you've just done it once, and it's like a virginity that grows back. You know, it's
not appealing.
Yeah.
So before we finish, we can have time for one question each.
Okay. Do you think writing's got worse since typing got easier?
No, it's got much better.
Because you can delete and...
Yes. But
do you not put less thought in... Well, I suppose eventually it'll all come out.
But have you ever read something a 20-year-old's written? Yeah, not good.
But if you find yourself a newspaper from 1983,
yeah,
my God, the shit. You know, it's just nonsense. It's just drunk people hammering away until the box fills up. But it wasn't even a box, however they did it. I mean, newspapers used to be really badly written. Really badly written. They're far better now.
Gabriel?
So you sort of mentioned it a while ago, sort of the rivalry within the newspapers.
Yeah.
So is there like a class system in the newspaper? So is there like the guys who write about politics are the cool kids?
Oh, I see.
And then the guys who write about sports are idiots because they just do, oh, he kicked the ball good.
So there's rivalry between newspapers, but it's not quite a hierarchy because everyone thinks they're the best and everyone else is rubbish. So it's like everyone thinks they're in different places on the hierarchy.
But within within
the newspapers, again, it's not quite a hierarchy, but there's certainly different cultures. You know, you've got the reporters who believe they're the ones who really do all the work and are probably right. You've got the columnists who are generally better paid, often a bit older, often a bit posher, who are, I think, probably slightly resented for not really doing a proper job by everybody else, with a little bit of justification sometimes. You've got features writers who are very, very adaptable, generally. You know, you can feature, I mean, I was a features writer for a long time, and as a features writer, you'll do everything from going to a refugee camp in Jordan to writing about the new hairstyle, you know, and it's often the same people doing all that kind of stuff. Everyone's slightly in awe of war correspondents. And then you've got the sort of senior editorial people who have to juggle a hell of a lot of stuff. So it's a lot of very different disciplines all kind of bundled together. Yeah.
And here's my final question. Have you or anybody you know been through someone's bins?
I've been through my own bin quite a lot. Does that count? Always throwing stuff out. I have not been through someone's bins. I must know someone who's been through someone's bins. My first staff job at the Times, I ran a gossip diary, which is a horrible job, which I meant to do for about 6 months, and I did for 5 years. Five horrible, endless years. And I don't really know where the people who gave me stories got them from. I can't think of any offhand that would have been got from going through bins, but I suspect there will have been the same people will have been selling stories else. Some of them must have gone through bins, for God's sake. Yes, of course.
I know someone who was writing a diary for The Standard, and because she was desperate, she was sort of inflating some people's celebrity status who she knew, because she knew stories about them.
Yeah.
And so she takes some credit for this person's career, which is such a weird way around, isn't it? That becomes... That person's become a star.
So what you do is you just if you hook up with a lowly journalist and you're their celebrity friend, it's sort of a symbiotic relationship.
That's what I'm trying.
I mean, that definitely happens. I mean, that happens with paparazzi as well. You know, paparazzi photographers often believe that they are the person who's put the person in the public eye because they've harassed them so for 20 years or whatever,
Is this how it works now? Like, if I wanted to be papped, would I ring up a paparazzi and go, I'm going to be outside this place without any pants on. Will you come and take a photo of me?
That is literally what you would do, yes.
So thank you very much, Hugo, Margaret, Gabriel. Before we go, is there anything you would like to plug?
Listen to my podcast, The Free Trek Podcast, on iTunes, Stitcher and Spotify.
Margaret?
My podcast is Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm on tour in May and June in John Finnemore's Flying Visit.
Oh yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, 2018, if you're listening in the future. I listen to really old podcasts.
Really? Like ones from like the 1900s?
Yes. Hang on a minute.
Hugo, is there anything you'd like to plug?
No.
What about your novels? Yeah. They sound like they're...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but buy my novel. It's like been out for 10 years now, but buy anyway. Overexposure, Canon Gate.
Thanks to my guests Hugo Rifkin, Margaret Cable-Smith and Gabriel Abulu. Any Stupid Questions was written and presented by me, Danielle Ward, produced by Ed Morris for the internet. We now have a Twitter account, yay, at Any Stupid Cues. So follow that for notices of new episodes and extra bits that we've cut out. And if you listen to a lot of podcasts, you'll know that we have to ask you to rate, review, subscribe and shout out of your car window to help other people find out about the show. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.